You are listening to episode 130 of the Africana Woman podcast, The Deep End, with Elizabeth Chilufya Chilangwa. My name is Chulu, your host. Let's go. Hello, beautiful. We have three more episodes of season 5 of the Africana Woman podcast. Please let me know what you think. Who have been your favorite guests? What lessons have stood out? What do you want to hear more of? I have to give a big shout out to Ngosa, Laika, and Namutula. So someone had asked for recommendations of amazing podcasts that she could listen to on socials. And they all recommended the Africana Woman podcast. I was like, oh, you guys. You guys are the best. Thank you. Like, really and truly. Do you know that the best way to support the Africana Woman podcast is to share it? So thank you, ladies. I really do appreciate the love. Africana Woman has been nominated for the prestigious Kayana MSME Award under the Diaspora Excellence category. So please, guys, let's bring this home. Go and vote. Share with people. Send them and say that, please, just vote for Africana Woman, eh? So you will find the link in the bio. I'm also excited to announce that I, Eho Chulu Chansa, Eho Chulu Chansa is a keynote speaker. Guys, namumfa, keynote speaker. So I'm going to be speaking at the Sunflower annual event on 25th May 2024. I'm really honored to be invited because it is in my hometown, Ndola. I bet you didn't know that I was a Coppola girl. So the theme is Arise and Thrive. We are going to be looking fabulous on the red carpet in champagne and white gowns. There is also a health talk and so much more to look forward to. Get your ticket today. Please get your ticket today. Look for Lady Nomsa on socials, or you can just go to Africana Woman. You will find the poster and all the details about how you can get your ticket. Listen, I don't want to hear that. No, I'm in a different town. What we all know that it is such a short drive between the towns. You can do a go come. So get your tickets. Get your tickets today. 25th May, I will be in Ndola. Woo! Gosh, I'm excited. All right, next week, I'm going to be in Solwezi. Ah! I'm going to be at Floriana Lodge on the 17th to the 18th of May. We are starting with a networking cocktail, followed by Lunch and Learn Solwezi. Please, guys, show up in numbers, my darlings. These events are for you to network with purpose and grow your business, your career, and personal brand. You can contact 0977-887-467 for your ticket. As you know, I'm from Zambia, okay? So we are currently experiencing a drought and the effects of refusing to diversify power supply despite the years and years of warnings, okay? Our government, at the hands of different regimes, has not looked into alternative sources of generating electricity. So we are now in a power crisis, the proverbial deep end. It's interesting watching the different responses. I think most people have stuck their head in the ground, pretending not to see or hear the warnings. Others have tekad chiridos, like it's, yo, guys, there's funerals, there's panic stations over here. And I'm yet to see a third option. I believe that the listeners of this podcast are entrepreneurial. You are naturally innovative and curious individuals. A crisis is also an opportunity. A business is an entity that thrives by identifying a problem and solving it. So, in whatever industry that you are in, How can you solve a problem that is an effect of the power crisis? I'm inviting you to put your fear aside for a few hours and really think deeply about how you would operate with no power. What would you need to implement? What can you invest in now? Just a thought. I love this week's conversation because it is all about the entrepreneur in Africa. How do you thrive? How long will it take for you to get on your feet and turn a profit as a business? What do you do in the lean months? Elizabeth Chilufya Chilangwa shares her story and wisdom from years of being an entrepreneur. Ladies, it is time to be proactive. Elizabeth Chilufya Chilangwa is an entrepreneur who is not afraid to take up a challenge. She runs an investment consultancy firm called Hitgalut Consultants Limited. They also provide soft skills training. On a personal note, she grew up in the Middle East in Jordan, studied in the US, worked in the film and video industry in South Africa before moving back home to Zambia. In her personal time, Elizabeth writes fiction, novels, and short stories. Hence, she is a self-published author. I am so excited to welcome Elizabeth to the Africana Woman Mic. Hi.
Thank you so much. I am so excited.
All right. What is your favorite childhood memory?
My favorite childhood memory. Oh my goodness. I have several. One of my favorite childhood memories was when I grew up in Jordan. So obviously it's going to be within that scenario. My favorite childhood memory was when I was at school, like grade school in grade two. I still remember my grade two teacher, Mrs. Nancy Habib, and my classmates, Eva-Lotta Wahlström. She's Swedish. And we were so colorblind, we just considered ourselves twins. And everything that we did, it's like we'll finish each other's sentences, and sometimes we'd even wear similar dresses and we'll do everything together. That I remember. And it's only until when I was older that I realized, I was like, we called ourselves twins because she is blonde and blue-eyed and you know me, I'm African. So that's the innocence of the child. And sometimes we just need to remind ourselves of the innocence of our childhood, so that we don't actually let our biasness get ahead of us. So that was one of my favorite memories.
That's a beautiful memory. How come you grew up in Jordan? That must have been interesting.
Yeah, my dad is actually the very first UNESCO and UNRWA envoy after independence. Mm-hmm. So his first post was in Jordan. And we were the first Zambians to be posted in Jordan. And I don't think they had a lot of African people being posted there at that time. And that was in the late 70s. Oh. So whenever they actually had any Africans that would come, they'll just say, oh, there's an African family here. So my parents always used to welcome and host them. And they just kind of like became ambassadors of other Africans that popped in and out of Jordan.
And how long were you
there? I was there for 13 years. My parents stayed on for a few more years. And because I'm the youngest of seven. So they wanted to make sure that I completed my school, and all my other siblings also completed their school. So I was the last one out of the house.
And then you went to the U.S. What was that transition like?
Oh, my gosh. It was a culture shock, complete culture shock. First, what we did, I traveled with my mom. And what we did is that we first went to Boston because my brother was already in school in Boston and we wanted to see him first. And my brother's reaction when he picked us up from the airport, he's just like, why are you guys looking so wide-eyed? I think for me, it was more of a culture shock. The people, the mannerisms, the fast pace of things, and just the environment was different. And yeah, it was a culture shock at first glance. And just getting to know the lifestyle of Americans and their food tasted different. Everything was just completely different. And it was like trying to learn a completely different culture all over again. Even though I grew up in an international community, but living in a completely different country altogether, it was like starting to learn a different culture altogether.
Did you ever live in Zambia?
I left Zambia when I was 5, when my dad got the job in the UN. So I was born here until I was 5 years old, then we moved to the Middle East. Then in my own accord, I decided to return home in 1999. And I've been here ever since.
But before that, you were in South Africa. So what did you study that made you now go to South Africa? I'm like, she's been everywhere.
I know. Yeah, so after Jordan, went to the US, did my undergraduate degree in English literature. After the 4 years, I worked for 1 year on the market in Philadelphia. And then after working in Philly, I moved to Johannesburg. It wasn't intentional for me to move to Johannesburg. When I was leaving the US, I just decided, well, let me do a detour and visit my sister in South Africa before going home. At that time, she was living in Joburg. So I went there and I just thought, let me check out the job market. Now, mind you, I'm from Generation X. Now, the Generation X people, we have a tendency of saying, I'll find out when I get there. And we pretty much have entrepreneurship mindsets, and we take the leap of faith. My generational exit, this is just our mentality. This is how we are passionate. That's just us. So I had a job market. Within 2 weeks, the film and video industry companies called Sasani Studios. And as an entry point, I was the PA to the CEO. And I didn't realize that it was such a huge company because they're the ones who actually produced and had the studios for back then, which was a popular soap, South African soap called Igoli. And yeah, so I didn't realize how big they were. But it was a fantastic entry point. And I eventually got transferred into a different department in the post-production department. So I helped out with the short films. And the post-production of all short films, whether they were African short films or American or British, whatever came through, I was helping out my supervisor with the short films in post-production.
So would you consider yourself like a creative?
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
Tell us about that.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. And I think I'm in a very good career to be creative, because when you're an entrepreneur, you have to think outside the box and look at the business concept to see if it will actually work. So, you have to have that creativity.
What made you decide to come back home? Because I think something that, I don't know, a lot of African parents, wish for their children is that, they will go out into the world, become global citizens, and then, live the, is it the American dream or whichever country dream they end up in?
Well, for me, in my case, my brothers were already in the U.S. My sister was there, but she also came back. My brothers who were there, they immediately found work, or they were doing internships, and there was promise of growth in their careers. Now, in my career as an editor and a writer, because I studied literature, that industry was not doing well during that time. So it was very difficult to find work. So they were giving priority to their own people. And so I decided that, okay, Also, living in Philadelphia was also a cultural experience, which where I didn't quite feel like I fit in as well. And I think I also had this yearning to be in an environment where I felt at home. If you've never really experienced home in your young adult years, you want to look for it. You want to settle down. So that's why I thought, well, let me try South Africa. Let's see. And that still didn't feel like home. So I eventually resigned after working in the industry for 2.5 years. I left and I drove my little car up to Lusaka. And I was just like, it was such a fresh breath of air because I felt like, wow, this is home. People who speak my language, I don't have to worry about my residency permit issues, legal aspects of being legal in the country. There's certain things you can and cannot do. I could vote. I could speak my mind. I could do anything that my heart desired in and apply myself in whatever career I wanted because the system would support me as a local. So the system was there and which made me feel comfortable to settle at home. And that's what made me stay. That's what made me stay. And I didn't realize that I was on a personal search for quite a long time. And that's what my first book, my first novel, my fiction novel was about. And I didn't know why I was writing it, but what I was really doing was I was personally on a search for myself, my own identity. And that's what the book is all about. So I was very quick to eventually finish that book. And I felt at peace about it because I finally knew that that journey was not just for the characters in the book, but it was about me, finding myself and where I belong and that satisfaction itself. So for me to come back home to Zambia, it was a certain satisfaction of knowing who I was and that I belonged here. And this is home for me.
So, you know, with your family all over the world, like who was your support system when you came back? I can imagine this, like, you know, a transition period, but you know, who do you call
oh,
on?
Oh, yes. Family. It's still my family because two of my sisters were already back home. They had returned. One was also in the, both of them were in the US, but they eventually returned home and they just got into their industries. One is in the development sector and one is in the banking industry. So there was already a huge market for them to be working. So for them, this was an ideal place. So they were my support system. They kind of helped me find my feet and also introduced me to some friends and you know, connections. And then eventually I found my own connections and just grew from there. It's always been my intermediate family. I do have extended family because I come from a very large family, but it's my immediate family who have been my support system, including my parents. When they eventually retired, they returned home. Yeah, and that was during when I was in the US. So they were already home. And I also had my two siblings who were home.
So when you came back, what were your I guess work prospects and career prospects? What were you thinking that you were going to do?
I thought it was going to be easy as pie. No, it wasn't. It was hard. It was hard. But I thoroughly enjoyed it because it was a challenge. I started off in the TV and video industry. That's where I pushed myself into. In fact, actually, generally communications. Even though my degree wasn't communications, it was English. I fit in quite well because that still has to do with writing and being able to be a good communicator. And I'm glad I did some extracurricular activities in my own time, doing some public speaking and self-confidence courses, as well as I did some modeling, which also helped with my self-confidence and helped me carry myself much better. And I use those tools in the workplace so that I can actually have the confidence to get into the industry as well as create my own industry. And I completely divulged within the arts itself in TV, radio, and print. So I used to do some stories for the newspapers, Times of Zambia, on occasion as a freelance writer. And I did some productions for radio as well as for TV. And that went on for quite some time. And that's how I found myself back into my writing skills and using my communication skills. And eventually I found my feet. I found my feet, yeah.
Before we, you know, before we clicked record, I asked you, what does Hitkalut mean? I just want you to share that.
Okay, Hitkalut means God's revelation in Hebrew. Now, I'm a believer, and I pray quite often, and everything that I do, I pray over. And I used to do motivational talks in high schools for free. And eventually a company spotted me doing this and he says, well, why don't you come and train my staff in customer care? Because you seem to be really motivating the kids how to dress, how to present themselves and career guidance and et cetera. My staff really need that. So I said, yeah, sure, not a problem. He says, but there's one problem. We only work with companies. I was like, oh, okay. So I quickly went and I registered a company in my name. And then I went and I prayed about it after I did the job. And I said, should I keep this company? And I prayed about it. And then I had a conversation with God. And then God says to me, he says, who gave you the revelation of what you do? So I said, you did. And he said, give it its original name. Now, God's original language is Hebrew. So I called a rabbi and I asked the rabbi, what is revelation in Hebrew? And she says, Hitgalut. I was like, okay, thank you. She's like, why? I said, I'll explain later. And that's how Hitgalut was born. And I've been operating. I grew it from scratch. I was a sole trader, then eventually a limited but shareholders. And now we have a branch in Malawi. And we're looking at West Africa as well. And we're also looking at the US, just trying to basically provide the same services across the board in the different countries and regions as well.
Well, what has been your, entrepreneur journey, especially as a founder, as a woman, you know, what has that been like?
Challenging. Not once did I say, I want to throw the towel in. No. Because I love what I do. Me not doing what I love is like, I might as well go into depression. It's challenging because when you're single and you're a Black woman and you're African, the odds are against you completely. And then eventually I was a single parent. That added on to the more challenges because society views you differently. And the labels, you get different types of labels depending on who you're dealing with and how they're going to treat you business-wise will also reflect on how they perceive you as well. So I had to basically create a balance and teach myself to be more of a listener, to give my clients the platform so that they don't actually allow their biasness to overshadow who I am. And it's a technique that I learned a long time ago through communication skills. When you provide people the voice, they gain the trust with you. And that's my technique. So it takes time to build that relationship with not just clients, but also closing the deal. Receiving payments as well. And the African continent is still very male dominated. And you will find that men will prefer dealing business with their fellow men and things get done so much faster. When it's you as a woman and you're single, it takes a bit of time because they need to build that trust. And some of them, they don't realize that they have that within them unless somebody calls it out in them. But the good thing is that most African men are now being exposed. They're being open-minded. They're beginning to understand the gender issues as well. And the exposure and the knowledge of accepting somebody who can actually deliver gives them the upper hand of also growing their business much faster. So with that open-mindedness has actually helped me create a platform which can help my business grow. It's taken longer because I have had to do it legitimately. Some people try to find the fast lane of how to do it, and it kind of stagnates you a bit when you do that. So I took my time. I took my time and I still take my time. I don't rush into things. So there are a lot of challenges, a lot of challenges, but I don't let them get the best of me.
Would you say that there's a difference between how single women are treated versus, I don't know, somebody in a committed relationship, be it a marriage? Or is it just women across the board who are treated a certain way in the workspace?
You will find three categories. I think there are three categories. One, if a woman carries herself and said, I am Mrs. So-and-so, if she's married to an affluential person, she's more likely to use her marital name to help her open doors. Yeah. Then also still with the Mrs., as long as she's a Mrs., she'll carry the Mrs. part throughout her business transactions because she understands that men, the African men, will have more respect for the woman and won't take advantage of her because she's already got a man to support her. And he wouldn't want to offend a fellow man. So business execution would work well in that sense. So carrying the Mrs. title in the workspace has got its advantages. Then there's the other category of single women, without children, that is, just single women. They have a challenge, like the challenges I've already mentioned before. The challenges of trying to avoid sexual harassment, and men trying to dangle that carrot and say, I'll exchange this favor for this, and then I'll give you this job. Then there's also the trust issue. If you are, there are a lot of talented, gifted women out there who are absolutely drop-dead gorgeous. Men feel intimidated. So the women who carry themselves extremely well and they're stunning will intimidate the men. So they also have that challenge as well. Then you've got the category of being single and a parent as well. You've got all the odds against you. Then you've got the category of married women who will feel threatened that you're going to take their husbands. So you're excluded from their networks. And those are the insecure ones. I'm not saying all of them. Those are the insecure ones. I'm giving you the negative side of things, but I'll give you the positive sides in just a moment. Then you also have the other challenge of balancing your home and work because you're a single parent. You can't be in two places at the same time. You got to actually look at your support system. Will they be able to support you when you have a challenge and then you're trying to execute a job? Those are the challenges. Now, the positive side of being single, whether you have children or not, the positive side is that you have unlimited time for you to do different things without having to consult your partner, and also looking at your partner's schedule and putting your career off for a while because you want to support your partner. You can go full head on and just hit the nail on the grindstone, and you put in your 150% because you don't have to worry about a partner. And you can expand yourself however you want to expand yourself. You can travel, you can take your child with you if you're a single parent, and you know there are limit possibilities as well, and you can take advantage of that as a single person. And you can even be married to your job, and that's a choice. So there are advantages, and there are also disadvantages as well. So yeah.
Can you think of a situation where you were that surprised you of I guess like the reactions of people in the workspace because of let's say being a single parent?
Okay, I was once at a cocktail. And there was a gentleman who was very shocked that I was single. And he even asked me, he says, "Who keeps you?" He couldn't really comprehend that a woman could actually have her own car, take care of herself, you know. And I was offended, but then I thought, okay, he hasn't been exposed. That's his problem. So that shocked me. That absolutely shocked me as well.
I like that. Who keeps you? Yeah, I can.
Yes.
No, I remember a similar situation. I was at an event. It was an all-women's event. Uh-huh. And I didn't really know many of the people there. Well, yeah, most of the people there. So I was friends with the organizer. And one of the ladies I sat next to at the table just kept asking me, like, "So who's your husband?" And I'm like, I don't have a husband. She's like, "Who's your husband?" And, you know, she said this 3-4 times. And then eventually she told me, "Oh, wait, I know your husband." And I'm like, "Oh, I'd love to meet him too, you know." It doesn't make sense.
I know. I've had that happen to me too. Women can be shocked. They can actually be shocked. Mm. And, you know, you can intimidate people with that in mind, you know. Women and men, you can intimidate them. You can intimidate them. So you can shock them. You can shock them. I think it's this, our African society, when they give you that label, it's like, okay, oh, she's got a husband, she's secure. She's secure. And if you look at the older generation, in our parents' generation, some families, if their daughter was in an abusive marriage, they'll tell her, as they say in Bemba, just put up with it. You just be glad you have a husband, you know? And I think it's still kind of there to show that you're still valuable with a male counterpart. And it's a sense of security. It's still there, whether we like it or not. And even in Western societies, they're so quick to, the parents of my girlfriends, they're always so quick to pair up their daughters, and they'll try to introduce them to all sorts. And, you know, oh, I remember when I was in Jordan, I was 15, 16, no, 17, actually. I was 17. And there was a new UN family that came in, an Italian family. So my dad's like, "Yeah, you know, they're coming in." I don't know how long they were in for. So we went and we passed through to visit them. And because they're an Italian family, the mother was there and the grandmother was there, but the son was away. He was a pilot in Italy. So I just happened to be with my parents that day. And the grandmother kept saying, pointing at me saying, "Oh, bella, bella, bella," and speaking in Italian. And she brings this picture of her grandson and pointing at the picture and speaking in Italian and turning to her daughter saying, "Bella, bella, bella," meaning beautiful, beautiful. And literally, she was trying to pair us up. And I felt very awkward, very awkward. And I think it's a society in general. People want you settled because they, maybe because they want you to share the relationship of being in the marriage, you know? And also there's also the sense of security, but it's not for everybody. You know, fate just doesn't happen like that for everybody. Maybe eventually, but maybe not. And I think people feel like, no, they have to be secure.
So what would you say? What would you say is a way of building your business as a, you know, as somebody who is single, who's not dependent on a man, you know, whether you're a single parent or not, but, you know, how do you get ahead? I know before you said you did it the, you know, the legal way. But what are things that women should be considering, especially when they're thinking about, you know, I really want to start this, to start a business and then possibly even expand to other countries, you know?
In my case, it was very difficult for me to find a full-time job in my career because as an editor and a writer, there isn't a very large market for it. And it doesn't exactly pay the international rates in Zambia. So I had to put my all in my business. Now, if you're in a career that you have a steady job, but yet it's not your passion and you want to start a business, start putting money away. Start putting money away and whatever little you have, start laying a foundation. Go and register that company. Get it in the system and just start building it slowly, slowly, slowly. There were times I actually literally just thought, no, I need a job. I have a child. I need to pay bills, school fees. I need to get my act together because that's what my whole family was saying. Get your act together, get a job. But I just could not find a job, you know? And I was constantly getting consultancy jobs. The more I formalized it, then I finally realized I would actually make more money when I'm a legitimate institution or a company. So that's why I did that. So it's important you reinvest whatever money you make into your business and build it slowly, slowly, slowly. And trust me, don't expect to have profits within the next 3 to 5 years. It doesn't work like that. We're living on an African continent where our exchange rates are not stable. They're not. And all sorts of incidences happen. Like in Zambia, we had three presidents that died back to back. So we had national mourning and everything goes dead. The market just goes dead because they don't know where the kwacha is going to go. Is it going to go up? Is it going to go down with the elections? And everything just goes dead. Nobody wants to invest into anything. So that's when you have a go slow. And that period was very quiet for me. Very, very quiet. And I had to be very innovative in how to make money. I did try full-time employment, but somehow as fate works it, those jobs never lasted. One job was dissolved. The other job, the company was going down. And then the third job, the department was, you know, dissolved. So I found myself back to Hitgalut. And each time I'll get a full-time job, I'll put my company on dormant. So as a backup plan, and which was very wise of me because I had something to go back to and keep it going. And if I'll get jobs while I'm in a full-time job, I'll go on leave. I'll go on leave, do that job, just so I have something in the system running. So you got to you got to really look at reinvesting back into your business. And when you reinvest back into your business, you're building an empire of your own. And I strongly believe that everybody's breakthrough is different of when it's going to happen. Some people can actually have it within 5 years. Some people can have it within 3 years. Some people can have it within 10 years. As long as you're consistent and people will get to know you on the market, that this is a person who does this, this is what they specialize in, then people will always be coming to you for that service on a regular basis. And it's through word of mouth. And that's how things work on the African continent, through word of mouth. Like even with what you do with the Africana woman, it's going to be through word of mouth. I heard about you through a word of mouth, through Matebeto. And these girls are like, oh, you got to come, you got to. And I was just like, okay, I'll find the time. And I started following the conversations and the activity in the WhatsApp group and your Instagram page. And it's just through word of mouth that Africana woman has grown. And it's the same thing with me. My target market, yes, they're local people, but it's also the international market. And you'll be surprised how small the world is, that somebody in West Africa can refer somebody in South Africa about what I do. That's how small the market is. And clients end up coming to me. I don't go looking for them. And it's because I've positioned myself. I set up a website, social media sites. I get myself out there. Not me, but I get the company out there and let the brand stay as one brand. And that brand is always going to be there, Hitgalut. You know, that's a Hitgalut brand, which is just going to be rolling out everywhere so that people can recognize it, so that people will know where to find you.
Yeah. So, you know, as a company that has clients, you know, locally, and then, you know, in other countries, are your rates the same? Or do you have like a local rate? And then when you, you know, you're dealing with a company from another, a client from another country, then that's a different rate.
Well, their market rates are different depending on where it is. Yeah. Because you will find yourself that you overprice yourself with local consultants. Mm-hmm. And they'll laugh. They'll just say, oh, that's an international consultant. It's only for the big boys. Also, take into consideration how you grow yourself. Now, we all have different skills and different talents. Yeah. I'm a great believer in putting your all in all in all your gifts and talents. For me, I'm also a writer. I'm also very good in communications. And I'm also very dynamic when it comes to coming up with different innovative ideas. So I always make sure that I grow in those areas. I'll give an example of my writing. When I do editing, the Zambian market rate is different from, let's say, Malawi. Malawi is a very expensive country, so their rates are quite high in comparison to Zambia. So what I'll charge in Malawi would not be the same that I'll charge in Zambia. And what somebody else charges in South Africa may not be the same as what we'll charge in Zambia. And it also depends on your experience. Yeah. When you're dealing with the international market, they will look at your experience. It's no longer so much of how many degrees have you got. It's now about how can you deliver? And it's through your record of delivery that they will entrust you and pay you market rates. When I say market rates, it's like the high end. And I think it's important that you do fulfill all of your gifts, because if you don't, somebody else is going to run off with that idea. Then there's also the aspect of overcharging yourself in a market. You had asked the question of, you know, market rates, international as well as local or somewhere else. It depends on the market itself, and it's important that you don't overprice yourself with that particular local market. unless you're dealing with the international people who are okay with dealing across the borders. So we all have this habit of charging in dollars because that's the currency that you can actually exchange in, even though the African continent is slowly but surely it's changing now. You can convert within your own currencies. But regardless of that, you have to be aware of that particular market. I'll give an example. In Nigeria, there's a particular trainer who also does Zoom training sessions, and he charges $50. Other people charge $100, depending on where it is. So if you're going to have a Zoom course, you have to think of your audience. Who is your audience? How much are you going to charge? Zambians won't pay for $100 for a course, the majority that is. Because when they do the conversion into kwacha, you're like, that's executive rate, you know? And if it's middle management people have to think about fuel, school runs, school fees, groceries. Should I not do this $100 course? Because it's equivalent to what I can spend with this. So you have people really thinking twice before spending that amount. So you really have to understand the market that you're going to go into so that you don't overprice yourself. And that is important. And it's important to also look at exercising all your other gifts. So in case of that particular industry, that season for it is dry. You can pick up another skill and do something to cover up for that gap of lack of working. I'm a great believer in that. And it's worked so well for me. It's worked really, really well for me. While this one is going slow, then I'll say, okay, let me look at doing my writing since this is not the season for training staff. So I try to keep a balance.
Yeah, I like what you said about the different seasons of how, you know, it's, you've got sometimes when it's working well and then sometimes that it's quiet, but then you can also go and try and do something. So I guess also saying diversify what you do, right? And not just rely
exactly.
on
exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, we are drawing near to the end of our conversation. I wanted to find out from you what advice you would give to African women who are, you know, trying or are seriously considering this entrepreneurship journey. What would your advice be? Maybe top three things.
My advice is that be a great listener and give your clients a chance to speak and hear. If you're into making natural beauty products, for example, listen to what your client is asking for and hear them well, because there are people out there with allergies and they're quite concerned and you know, they hesitate in getting stuff that they're not familiar with. They don't know whether they're going to react or not. So I'm just giving that as an example. You need to be a good listener so that you can give the client a particular tailored product for them. Also just being a listener in finding out what your client is looking for, and be very honest if you can deliver and make referrals, because then they'll eventually come back to you for something else, and they can refer you to somebody else and say, well, she does this, even though I didn't use her, you can try and use her. It's important to be honest. Don't try to get into something you have never, ever, ever done before without actually doing any research on it or even knowing somebody who you could subcontract to. If you already have a backup plan and you know that somebody else you can subcontract it to them, confidently say yes. But if you don't even dare, because you won't be able to deliver adequately and successfully. Also, the most important thing is have a passion and a desire to get into that job or business that you want to do. If you don't, you're going to hate it. You're going to hate it and you won't want to do it. And the environment will frustrate you because you're a woman, because some men may not want to work with you. Some women may not want to work with you because they just use the PhD syndrome, you know, pull him down syndrome or pull her down syndrome. And you will just end up shutting down. So if you're passionate about it, you'll end up finding ways to get around the challenges that you will encounter when you're growing your business. That is very, very important. And I think that's the number one thing that you need to put it at the very, very top. Be passionate about what you want to do and enjoy it. Enjoy it. No matter whether it's a stormy season for that business that you're doing, you're still going to hold on until the storm passes so you can pick up from where you left off because you're passionate about it. Yeah.
I love that. I agree. So in the Africana woman community, we have a saying, which is know your roots, grow your purpose. So I've got four questions for you just to wrap up. So the first question is, what are you rooted to?
I am rooted to my passion. And I'm also rooted to God as well. Because without these two, because my passion is part of the gift that God has given me of what I do, and the revelation that I get to execute what I need to do is there, is from God. So that is part of my root.
So what are your favorite ways to nourish your mind, your body, and your soul?
Oh, I love, love, love reading. Absolutely love. And it just, it fulfills me. If my corporate work really gets to me, I switch off. I either go into my writing or my reading. That is my go-to space.
Is that for your mind? So what about your body and your spirit?
And also my spirit is being with in fellowship and sharing the word of God with my friends. That elevates me. And then I have an aha moment on how to handle myself spiritually and emotionally as well. Physically, I do my stretches, I go for walks, and I just sit outside and just enjoy the nature. And it's breathtaking, grounding myself. Grounding, basically, for those of you who may not know, is just walking on the grass barefoot, just getting in touch physically with the earth. There's just something about it. It just calms me down. So it just nourishes me spiritually, physically, and emotionally, those things of doing my stretches, walking, getting out in the fresh air, spending some spiritual fellowship time with my friends, and my reading. If I don't have any of those, I feel like something's not right. Something's missing. And I need to feel complete again, having all of those things activated in my life.
So do you have a weakness that has now become a superpower?
My weakness was to shy away. Now it's become my superpower because I just dive into it. I just dive into it. And then revelation eventually comes as I'm building it. And I get excited. I am no longer shy. I think if I was like this 10 years ago, I think my business would have been successful earlier. Much, much earlier.
So what shifted?
Challenges. I was forced into the deep end. I was pushed into the deep end. I had no choice. I had absolutely no choice. You know, when you're building your own business, you can crash and burn a couple of times. You know, you're back to zero. Somebody can rip you off and you're going back to zero and you're forced to really start all over again. And it happens. It happens as an entrepreneur. You lose out, or a client goes bust when you're just about to receive that payment. The client just goes bust. And then what do? So with those challenges, when you overcome it, it forces you to go into the deep end to do what you got to do to survive.
So what do you know as a certainty?
A certainty is knowing yourself and knowing what you can and cannot do. That is where it is. If you don't know yourself, the certainty and understanding of who you are, forget it.
So what do you know about yourself?
I know that I have got the confidence to do it. I'm very sensitive, that I know, but I also have to remind myself that I have to get into a space to not let my emotions get ahead of me.
Elizabeth, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking with
thank
you today.
You.
Please let
thank
the audience
you.
Know, how can they connect with you? Where can they find you, find out what you're doing and how to support you?
Well, I am on social media sites, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn and Twitter. Any of those where you can send messages, please do go ahead. Especially with Hitgalut Consultants, all the social media sites, I respond much, much quicker than my personal ones. I rarely go to my personal ones. That's when I'm just unwinding. But with the business social media sites, I respond instantly. Just send me a message. On Messenger, on Facebook, even on LinkedIn, I respond instantly.
Thank you so much. And
yeah, this has been fun.
We are in the deep end. It is time to learn how to swim. It is time to learn how to be strong. Yeah, we have shitty cards, but it does not mean we cannot thrive. What stood out to me from this conversation is being very clear about what your talents are. Know yourself. This will allow you to diversify your services and products depending on the season. So it is time to give our guest her roses. Please find Elizabeth on LinkedIn and say thank you. Take a screenshot, share it to your stories, and let people know what you learned from her. By the way, Africana Woman has a TikTok account now. Hey, we're having a bit of fun. So give us a follow. It's Africana Woman. You can just search Africana Woman. And yeah, give us a follow and like our videos. The best way to support the Africana Woman podcast is to share it. Share it with a sister, a friend, and even a brother. Yeah, we need brothers out here being more woke. Thank you so much for taking time to listen to the Africana Woman podcast. I absolutely love that you have allowed us to be part of your week, to be part of your day. And I hope you have learned something and you are just enjoying being part of this community. The Africana Woman podcast is part of the Africana Woman Network. My name is Chulu, your host. Until next time.